Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
The best podcast.
About antiques.
And anything else.
Mostly antiques.
But mostly antiques.
Today we will begin in 1827 through 1838.
Well, that's a tight range.
During this time, John James Bonkers for Birds Audubon publishes his magnum opus.
John James Bonkers for Birds Audubon, is it?
Oh yes, full name. His book is The Birds of America, from Original Drawings by John James Audubon.
Tooting his own horn a little bit there.
Little bit. It is 435 hand-colored, life-size prints from engraved plates of basically every bird our boy Audubon could find in America.
Okay, so he did earn a little bit of that.
He did do 435 meticulous, scientifically accurate, full-color watercolor illustrations.
I'm still laughing at basically it's titled, My Book, by me. But yeah, that is a lot of work.
Yeah, in a pre-internet, pre-color photograph world, this is fucking incredible. Probably the first and only way many people ever saw these birds. Audubon's illustrations are consistently praised as lifelike, which they are.
True.
A marked departure from most illustrations of birds up to this point.
Which was, I saw a bird once 10 years ago and got really drunk trying to remember.
And then described it to another guy who then drew it.
Who's also drunk.
In reality, Audubon shot the birds and rigged up their corpses.
Oh, I knew there was a dark underbelly.
He shot the birds and rigged up their corpses with wires and string into the poses he wanted to draw.
Okay. How many times did he try to do a life study before he was like, fuck it, and pulled out a gun?
I mean, I know my personal patience as an art student. Maybe three times. Before you just say, fuck it, and shoot the damn bird.
He kept fucking flying, and he was like, never mind. Stop moving.
Oh my God.
I can see it so clearly.
So, the finished colored plates were sold through subscription, three at a time. Each package of plates included one large bird, one medium bird, and three small birds.
Ah, the precursor to Pokemon cards.
Basically.
Guaranteed to have one large-sized bird.
It's a fucking gachapon for bird pictures.
What more Victorian invention is there?
Fuck. Dead bird loot box. A complete set of 435 plates cost about $1,000.
Just like Yu-Gi-Oh!
And that's in early 19th century money, not adjusted for inflation.
Oh, so that's roughly $4 million.
It is more money further back than the inflation calculator goes. It's money.
It's money.
And because they were sold by subscription, a lot of people, like, gave up partway through the set before they received all of the prints, which means that fewer than 200 complete sets ever existed.
Wow. Shit.
Yeah.
It's a problem with subscription-based services.
From Wikipedia, quote, the plates were published unbound and without any text to avoid having to furnish free copies to the public libraries in England.
Get fucked, poor people, said John James Audubon, whose nickname had been appended to John James Fat Stacks Audubon.
The high cost of production and the rarity of complete sets and the age of the work as a whole have combined to make complete sets of the Birds of America among the most expensive books in the world.
Wow.
On January 20th, 2012, the most recent auction I could find, a complete first edition sold at Christie's for $7.9
million.
And that's not even the highest price.
I was going to say, I think I remember that one.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back in the 19th century, to quote William Soder of Smithsonian Magazine, Audubon insisted that birds were so plentiful in North America that no depredation, whether hunting, the encroachment of cities and farmlands, or any other act of man, could extinguish a species.
Wow, John James, it's shortly speaking as the wrongest anyone's ever been. All right, hey, when you started writing these notes, did you mean to make me think he was a total bastard?
When I started writing these notes, they were going to be a footnote. And then I developed the notebook you see before you.
Which is just full of John James Audubon's bastardry.
full of John James Audubon being the most incorrect anyone has ever been about birds.
Like, I bet you couldn't kill one. You dumb idiot. You... Was that just, like, one of those, like, desperate justifications for why he, like, murdered and strung up hundreds of them? It's just like, whatever, it's not like it matters.
Yes.
He's got a California condor and, like, a puppet, and he's like, what? There's a lot of them. I saw six.
Legit, though? I am reminded of that bit in Moby Dick when Ishmael's like, we can never run out of whales. Yeah, we're finding fewer whales every day, but that's just because they're hiding.
They're just smarter than me. Which, like, I guess, yeah.
I mean, it is Ishmael, so yeah, the whales are definitely smarter, but... Whales aren't vanishing, they're just hiding.
They're just hiding, they're in a hole. I've never been to Alaska, which means that's gotta be where they are.
And that's how we lost the New Bedford fleet.
That's true. That's not even a joke.
It is funny, though.
It's funny. I love them dying in the Arctic Circle.
Most of the people were fine.
Yeah, that's true.
The boats all died.
And isn't that really more tragic?
Yes.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, in 1851, John James Bonkers for Birds Audubon kicks it.
Thank God. What did him in a bird?
If only.
Did John James Audubon finally realize he could go extinct?
Speaking of extinct, he is super deceased from here on out.
Thank God.
He is an ex-parrot fancier.
Oh, no. No, you brought the bit in. You brought that bit in. You opened the door and you invited it in.
He is so dead. Just the dead as dead can be. As dead as the 400 birds he killed to make his book. He's just so fucking dead. Cannot emphasize enough how dead John James Bonkers for Birds Audubon is at this moment in time. Someone, and from here on out, someone, continuing to be deceased.
Someone wired him up and painted his portrait. Not out of the question for 1850.
No. In the mid-19th century, John James Audubon continues to be dead. And in Western society, hats are compulsory.
Yeah, you know, you would get shot on sight, socially.
Everyone, regardless of sex, must wear hat. To be caught outside without a hat on in this era is like leaving the house in just your underwear today.
Even virgins have to wear hats.
And not in a quaint leggings are basically underwear way, but in a literally the only thing hiding your family jewels is your tidy whities way.
So your head is your privates.
Your hair should be seen only by your husband and God.
Well, I don't want that dirty bird God looking at my hair.
Knocking a man's hat off is the equivalent of pantsing him.
Well, that makes Ishmael's statement that much more, like, punchy.
Listen, Ishmael!
I guess we're gonna keep bringing up Ishmael for some reason. But...
I'm going to resist going on a Moby Dick tangent, which, as you know, is a big step for me.
It's a huge restraint.
But suffice to say, yeah, Ishmael was on some crazy, crazy shit.
Can we just talk about how much better that opening scene would be if it's Ishmael just running around New Bedford, just tugging dudes' pants down?
That's what I'm saying, is essentially he was. When he's so like, good. When I go into the street and knock everyone's hats off, he's just like running around pantsing dudes in 19th century terms.
And this is why getting into literature is really fun.
Because sometimes a guy is like, I just want to pants dudes and kill myself, so I went on a boat instead.
Big mood.
Big mood.
That's also what happens to me in New Bedford.
Hashtag relatable. But back to hats. In the 19th century, if you leave the house, you are wearing a hat.
I'm wearing a hat.
And speaking of hats, in 1868, Harper's Bazaar reports, a few of the feather and fur bonnets now so fashionable in Europe have just been imported. The feathers used are those of the grebe and pheasant. The white and pearl gray grebes are bound with green, scarlet, or blue velvet.
Well, this is already... I can kind of see where this is going because I know grebes are endangered.
Now how'd that happen,
and like, a good quarter of all pheasant species, too? Yeah.
I wonder if that is related today's episode topic.
Just saying.
As a result, in the 1870s, feathered hats take off.
Ah, the feather. Yeah, the wings of the bird.
Flight joke. Because capitalism.
Thank God.
But no.
What would you do without it?
The growing middle class creates the demand, and the improvements to global shipping and hunting technology create the supply.
Oh, boy.
All this is exacerbated by the general excess of Gilded Age America.
That messed up a lot, actually.
It really did. According to RacingNellieBly.com,
okay.
Feathers became the must-have decoration on garments, parasols, muffs, boas, and fans. As the craft of taxidermy advanced, entire birds were displayed. Audubon style!
I love it. I love it. I don't, but...
Dead birds include, but are not limited to, flamingos, birds of paradise, roseate spoonbills, the Carolina parakeet, which is now extinct.
Whoa, whoa, wait, wait. I gotta interrupt real quick. Three of those are not breeds of bird I'd fuck around with. You ever seen a roseate spoonbill? Jesus Christ. It's like, yeah, I'm gonna go tussle with a sandhill crane. I want its ass on my hat.
So sandhill cranes are also on this list.
What?
As are herons. And, just, like, I didn't find a mention of cassowaries, but I feel like that's only because none of the hunters survived.
Like, that's just, like, yeah, they weren't, like, Australia was still, like, lame. For everyone. So, like, I think at the time, it just sounds like they were trying to murder all the scariest birds they could find.
Real talk, that's all birds.
Well.
Also, herring gulls. Beautiful face, D.
You just keep mentioning very scary birds that I'm afraid of.
Herring gulls in particular were harvested for the red markings that appear only during breeding season.
Oh, what a good sign for their population.
I know, right?
Wow, well, this one bird has a plumage that only appears when you smash every egg in its nest.
Yeah.
It's like, gotta have it, gotta.
Also, owls. A wide variety of owls. Stuffed owl heads in particular come up again and again and again.
Listen, I really want the ones that are covered in knives. Could you go out and get me, like, a gross of the knife bird?
I need knife bird.
I need knife bird.
Knife bird on head.
Yeah, well, the one with the knife on the bottom and the top? Like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, both ends knife. I want that.
Put knife on head.
I need that on my head. Post haste.
I have an aside here wondering if whether or not the wearing of owl plumage would grant the wearer the power of silence in movement.
Very, very cute. That's only the Taito subspecies, largely.
I'd make the noise of an owl approaching, but it's silent, so...
wait, so, yeah, no. Some other things about owls I just remembered. So we needed to get out there and murder the birds that are covered in knives, tip to toe to tip, that only come out at night and scream.
Yeah, those ones!
They were really just pushing for excess.
That's the Gilded Age.
There's tons of really nice birds that just hang around.
Listen, there's a reason we call it the Gilded Age.
You need to get the screaming murder birds.
On my head.
On my head now.
Also hummingbirds.
That's just sick.
Entire hummingbird corpses were turned into earrings and brooches.
What? Is this an episode of Captain Planet?
I mean... Not to go, like, full eco-terrorist, but yes.
God.
And of particular note are the snowy egret and the great egret.
Oh, no.
These are especially sought after for a special kind of hat called the aigrette, which is literally just French for egret.
That's lame. You couldn't give it a cool name?
It's basically a crown of fluffy white egret feathers. It takes 4 egrets to create 1 aigrette.
That's too many.
By the way, we're going to be doing a lot of dead bird math this episode. But,
and that's terrible.
Note, egrets are fluffiest in breeding season.
Of course.
Which means hunters are slaughtering mated pairs, skinning them, and leaving the corpses to rot in the nest beside their starving babies.
Wow.
4 egrets per hat.
Thank you for painting that word picture.
An 1875 update from Harper's Bazaar on hat trends. The entire bird is used and is mounted on wires and springs that permit the head and wings to be moved about in the most natural manner.
Natural, of course, that's just how it normally goes.
Ain't nothing more natural than a dead bird on your head.
Yeah, like, the snow egret's natural habitat is the human head.
Also eerily reminiscent of Audubon's method.
Yeah.
He's still dead, by the way.
Thank God. I want him on a hat.
Give it time.
His fingers.
In 1886, ornithologist Frank Chapman of the American Museum of Natural History goes for a stroll in Manhattan and counts the dead birds he sees on hats.
Starts crying.
He details his findings in a letter to the editors of Forest and Stream magazine.
And he's covered in tears.
Through the tear stains, he reports that in one afternoon he counted 700 hats, 543 of which have at least part of a bird corpse.
I'm mostly impressed that he, like, counted for that long.
They didn't have Netflix. They had attention spans instead.
Honey, where are you going? Out. 1, 2, 3, 70, 27.
Just going out to count hats.
Honey, you have any idea how many hats are in the city? Not counting the ones covered in dead birds? I want a divorce.
We're going to the Dakotas.
You won't buy me one of those bird hats that I want.
The joke is that the Dakotas had the most lenient divorce laws, so couples seeking divorce would legit move there.
Oh.
Anyway.
And now you know that.
In the 1886-1887 winter issue of Good Housekeeping, we get the report that at Cape Cod, 40,000 terns have been killed in one season by a single agent of the hat trade.
Do you mean those terns that are endangered in the Cape now?
Yeah, those ones.
Right. Right, those terns.
Absolutely unrelated.
I bet.
The same issue also reports 40,000 seabirds killed on Cobb's Island off the coast of Virginia. These are sold at 40 cents apiece to just one milliner.
What did... So many questions. Including, what do you have storage space for 40,000 birds?
Warehouse.
Ugh, God, that smelled awful.
I mean, it's not great. In 1892, according to the Fashioning Feathers blog, a single order of feathers by a London dealer included 6,000 birds of paradise, 40,000 hummingbirds, and 360,000 various East Indian bird feathers.
Well, at the end, we just stopped figuring out what kinds of birds. We're just like, there's a lot. Here's the general region they came from.
And that's not, like, the number of birds killed in a year. That is the number of birds from a single order of feathers by one London dealer to meet the hat demand. So multiply those numbers by every hat maker in London.
Which was a lot.
Which was several.
1,000.
The estimate I found was 5 million birds killed per year. Meanwhile...
Good.
Milliners claim this is all fine and cool because killing birds and putting them on hats lets city dwellers see nature for once.
Well, of course, what better way to interact with nature?
Dead bird on a hat.
It's like a dead bird crafted by a man who's got mercury poisoning.
I mean, you know. And arsenic, because taxidermy. It's just, but, like, you know.
Feeble crawling out of the milliner going, yeah, of course. They all want to see the birds. Like, what a ghoulish sight.
They also claim that hunters are just harvesting naturally shed feathers off the ground.
Absolutely not. It's not what's happening.
Yeah, because that does nothing to explain the entire dead bird on your head.
Could you imagine saying that with a straight face? Just like, aren't you concerned about all the dead birds? Like, I just picked that up out of the woods. Just like a face. Like, yeah, I just found it like that. All 40,000 of them.
It's four dead egrets on a single hat. He's just like, I found it.
They're just like, we're good. Nodded to get.
Like, it was like that when I got here.
It's not like my fault.
I found it without the skin on.
Yeah, sometimes birds die and then turn themselves inside out. What do we do? Waste it?
So, if so many birds were killed for so many hats for so many years, how come the antique stores of today aren't full to bursting with dead bird bonnets?
Oh, that's easy. Okay, I'm gonna take two guesses. One is that animal parts in general degrade at a horrendous rate if you're not caring for them properly, and a hat isn't caring for it properly. And or B, Fishing Game's got something to do with this. Possibly both.
Both is good. Because in 1896, Harriet Lawrence Hemingway, a Boston Brahmin, reads about the bird slaughter for hats and does a triple backflip off the handle.
Yeah, real quick, Boston Brahmin?
Boston upper class, obsessed with never talking to anyone who isn't also a member of the Boston upper class.
Right, okay, so not a bull.
No.
Okay.
Also not the Kennedys.
What?
Common mistake. Because people think prominent Boston family, they think, oh yes, the Kennedys. But actually the Kennedys were like Irish from the South Side. They were technically not allowed to talk to Boston Brahmins. But then they became presidents, so...
I can assure you that despite my proximity to Boston, I literally never think about the Kennedys. Except to occasionally, like, grimly remind people of that one Kennedy that killed a woman.
Oh,
that
sweetie.
We know about.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it was not just one.
The one public woman that was killed by a Kennedy.
The one time they got caught, yeah. Anyway. Hemingway and her cousin, Minna B. Hall, break out the Boston Blue Book and invite everyone in it to a series of tea parties.
And already I like where this is going.
At these tea parties, the cousins explain the barbaric practices of the hat industry and urge everyone who's anyone in Boston to stop wearing feathered hats.
Okay.
Over 900 women join their boycott.
Oh, nice.
And in that same year, Hemingway and Hall team up with ornithologist William Brewster to create the Massachusetts Audubon Society.
Aw, did the advertisements just posters of Mr. Brewster crying into his hands?
This is your friendly reminder that John James Birdboner Audubon has been dead for 45 years.
Birdboner.
So, Audubon had nothing to do with the founding of the Audubon Society, because he was wicked fucking deceased.
Was it just that, when they named it, was it just that, like, there was literally one guy who had ever cared about birds that anyone knew anything about?
That, and also because this is a society formed by rich kids who first learned about birds through Audubon's super expensive book.
There we go.
Because they're the only people who could afford it.
It all came right back around.
Came back around. Speaking of rich kids, at some point during this time period, I looked for an exact date and could not find one, opera singer Lily Lemon offers autographs to her fans in exchange for their promise not to wear feathers.
Wow.
Yeah.
That,
not even remotely fucking around.
Not in the general vicinity of fucking around here.
Nope. Also, in the latter half of the 19th century, society in general blames women for bird genocide. Punch and similar magazines run cartoons of upper-class women mercilessly slaughtering birds in the nest.
Did they forget? Never. You know what? Never mind. You know what?
Oh, we need it. Never mind, because Virginia Woolf shows up.
Of course she does. At the hour I need her most.
And points out that the plume industry is owned, operated, and profited from by men.
Thank you, Virginia Woolf.
Something, something, capitalism always blames industrial excess on the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
Put a pin in this, we're coming back to it.
For roughly the next 2,000 years, yeah.
In 1897, the Massachusetts Audubon Society leans on their legislators so hard that they pass a state law prohibiting trade in wild bird feathers.
Oh, thank God.
In 1898, the Audubon Society promotes replacing dead bird hats with the bird-friendly Audubonnet.
Oh.
It's an Audubon bonnet.
No, I got that, yes.
How droll.
What does it look like?
Well, it replaces bird feathers with ribbons and artificial flowers.
Oh, so the tackiest thing possible.
Yeah, it didn't catch on.
I'm also just remembering, like, what I know about the women who manufactured silk flowers.
Also there. More on that in our Arsenic Green episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the year 1900, Congress passes the Lacey Act, which prohibits taking illegally hunted birds across state lines. Because prior to this, hunters would be like, oh, it's illegal to sell birds in Massachusetts. I'll just kill the Massachusetts birds and sell them in a different state.
Yeah. Oh, I'm intimately acquainted with the Lacey Act.
Oh, I bet you are. And in 1902, according to historynewsnetwork.org, over 200,000 great egrets were slaughtered in order to provide 1.5 tons of feathers for women's apparel. You can't see this because this is an audio presentation, but Dee's eyes are about the size of dinner plates.
Great.
And pulsing with rage.
Great egrets, they don't have a lot of young.
No.
They're what you call a slow reproducer.
Yeah.
200,000 is a lot of bird.
It many, many bird.
I don't know why I just started coming from Jersey with that one.
Several bird.
I ever told you about the bird.
Is that Jersey?
Is that Jersey? Is that Minnesota?
I don't know where.
Chicago?
I have no idea where your accent is.
I don't pay attention when I'm in the Midwest.
Please come back to New Bedford.
Okay. I'm gonna park the car.
Leave New Bedford.
Well, all right then, partner.
In that same year, according to the Fashioning Feathers blog, an auction in London sold 1,608 30-ounce packages of heron plumes. Each ounce of plumes required the use of 4 herons. Therefore, each package used the plumes of 120 herons, for a grand total of 192,960 herons killed.
What, that we're packaging it in ounces like it's goddamned cocaine?
That's also from, like, one auction, so extrapolate from that. Dead bird math.
There's a lot. It's here for the listeners who at home didn't do the math. Oh, it's so many.
In 1903, President Teddy Roosevelt signs an executive order turning Florida's Pelican Island into a protected federal bird reservation.
Presumably he signs it with a pistol.
Knowing him, he probably signed it with a feather just for irony.
Chuckling to himself.
In 1905, the Audubon Society goes national. All the little individual societies scattered across America come together to form one big society.
Nice.
Yes. Same year, South Florida game warden Guy M. Bradley is shot and killed while attempting to arrest a bird poacher.
Oh boy. Well, that just got real.
A, quote, sympathetic jury acquits his murderer.
What?
So the plume trade in America now has a human body count.
Wait, sympathetic on what?
Sympathetic to the killer. He was just trying to poach some birds.
Listen, he was just trying to murder some defenseless animals, and then he murdered a man.
It could happen to anybody.
That could have been any one of us. Stealing birds in the night and then killing a man.
Just another Tuesday.
I, for one, stand by him. What?
Listen, I can't justify it. I can just tell you every single website who mentioned this fact called them sympathetic.
God, I hate humans.
In 1913, William Temple Hornaday publishes his book, Our Vanishing Wildlife. You'll never guess what it's about.
Is it about his incredibly cool name?
Alas, no. It's about dead birds.
Oh, well.
In his book, he exposes the plume trade as wholesale slaughter, backing up his claims with hard stats from 3 London plumage sales in February, May, and October of 1911.
Unlike shooting a man in cold blood who was just trying to do his job, which is guaranteed by a jury to not be wholesale slaughter.
Yeah. The total number of bird corpses auctioned during these 3 sales is as follows. 129,168 egrets. 13,598 herons, 20,698 birds of paradise, 41,090 hummingbirds, 9,464 eagles, condors, etc.
What? I was kidding about the condors when I said it.
No, there's no such thing as a dead bird joke.
They're the size of fucking Mini Coopers. How did you even take them down? Oh, guns. Yeah.
I think the guns helped. Total number of dead birds, 22,490. From just 3 auctions.
The 3 auctions.
3 auctions. So extrapolate from there.
I'm guessing that happened more than once a year.
Yeah. Casual reminder that this is a global trade with global consequences. Good face.
I was just like, what do you... Hell.
Dead bird hell.
How did it... It's like any other fashion, right? It's gone in like a... Like, we had 10 whole minutes, 10 glorious minutes of, like, the holographic see-through plastic. But like, somehow putting a whole goddamned bird on your head is just enduring through the decades.
Yeah, it's been going for, like, 40 years at this point.
Yeah, what the...
And that's, like, math, not fun exaggeration. 1870s through 1910s, yeah, that's 40 years.
Yeah, legitimately 4 decades of this thing standing as like an established fashion thing.
Can anything put an end to this? In 1918, we get the Migratory Bird Treaty Act.
Now there's one I know by heart.
You do? Because it makes it illegal and unlawful to pursue, hunt, take, capture, kill, possess, sell, purchase, barter, or offer for sale, purchase, or barter, any migratory bird, or the parts, nests, or eggs of such a bird, except under terms of a valid permit issued pursuant to federal regulation. Stop killing birds.
My favorite thing about the Migratory Bird Act is that, like, basically, people were such bastards about it that they literally had to pass a law that you couldn't touch bird, like, you can't, like, if you pay attention to the letter of that law, you can't have them.
No, you cannot own any part of a bird.
Like, you can't pick, even if you did, like, much like every liar in, for the last 40 years had been saying, if you pick up bird feathers in the woods, that's a federal crime.
Yeah. If you find a cardinal feather on the ground, pick it up and say, this is mine now, congratulations, you're a felon.
For real, like...
Like, not joking.
That's the extent to which they had to go to get people to stop doing this.
Species saved from extinction include...
Finally, some good news.
The snowy egret.
Oh, thank God.
The wood duck.
Oh, yeah.
And the sandhill crane.
Thank, well, you know, without that, we wouldn't have had Mothman.
Actual note, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act saved Mothman.
On the level. On the level, man.
Great goths think alike. Which brings us up to today.
We're here.
Now, I'm sure you're wondering, what does the Migratory Bird Treaty Act mean for the antiques industry?
Oh, it means you're going to learn about birds a lot and fast.
Do tell.
Well, one thing I know about the Migratory Bird Act is that, like, there are leniencies for native birds that don't migrate given appropriate licensure.
Hence the name Migratory Birds Act.
Yeah. Which, so, fun facts, there are actually dreadfully few birds that don't move.
Yeah. It turns out giving them the gift of flight made them move around a bunch.
Yeah, like, most bird life cycles do involve at least one major migration. So, it's a really short list. good news for you, because the minute you have a bird corpse any within 500 feet of you, you're going to have to prove to Fish and Game when they come through.
And they will come through.
And they will come through. That you are aware of its species, and whether or not that species is migratory or non-migratory, and or native. There are some tetchy parts in the law about, like, majority of time for birds that migrate rarely. And also you're gonna have to prove licensure, which no one can.
Good luck!
Because usually they let you go a little on the licensure if it's a native species, but I know a lot about ducks.
Oh yeah. Because the law does not care how long a bird has been dead.
No, this one does not have any grandfather clauses in.
There is no exception for antique dead birds.
Which is really interesting given that, like, for perspective on the scope of the problem, there is a time limit on sites, which includes some of the most critically endangered animals in the world now.
Such as?
White rhinos.
Oh, so if I have, like, an antique white rhino, that's fine for Fish and Game. But if I have an antique crow, Fish and Game is on my ass?
Yep, prior to 1970, you can have a white rhino.
Oops.
And that would be legal. And, like, again, that's because there aren't anywhere near as many people killing and importing white rhinos. With the birds, it was so hard to stop.
We killed more birds than we ever had white rhinos alive.
Yeah. Yeah, we killed more birds than we've ever had white rhinos in the history of the goddamn planet.
5 million a year.
And, like, I just find that really stunning, is that, like, I can have a lion corpse, legally, that Fish and Game won't give a shit about. But I, there is a feather in my pocket from a bird of prey that I picked up in the woods that does technically make me a felon. Oh god, I hope nobody from Fish and Game is listening to this. I'm gonna get rid of that feather right now.
The feather we never had? Absolutely.
Yeah, it didn't exist. Birds aren't real.
So this is why, despite millions of birds turned into hats, you will not find a dead bird hat for sale in an antique shop.
You really won't.
That, and as Dee mentioned up top, taxidermy in general does not age well, and wearable taxidermy fares even worse.
And even just adding on to that, bird taxidermy was so difficult. I think you get good bird taxidermy, like, in the last 20 years, and that's it. Like, a lot of it wasn't made to last.
Despite Audubon's best efforts.
Yeah. And it makes taxidermy birds and, like, bird hats super expensive, because those things have paperwork. A lot of paperwork.
There are, however, some recent changes to the Migratory Bird Treaty Act.
I'm gonna shit my pants, aren't I?
Oh, yes. On several levels. Because I came into this episode prepping for research because I just wanted to talk about dead birds on hats because, dang it, that's funny to me. I'm a sick fuck.
It is pretty funny.
And then I started researching, and then I got really pissed off.
It always happens that way.
And I say this as a non-vegan, non-PETA, non-anti-fur individual.
Yeah, I like, we're saying this as people who think the AZA is great.
I say this as a man who loves taxidermy and just dead shit around in general. This episode made me really mad about dead birds.
Yeah.
Because hats are no longer the biggest threat to birds.
Oh, of course not.
Birds are still killed by industry, just different industry. Industries like power lines, which kill 175 million birds per year.
I'm not gonna lie to you. For a moment of levity and from your face, you need it. My brain, real quick, was like, Powerline? The fictional singer from a Goofy movie?
No. So you'll note that 175 million is a bigger number than 5 million.
As you can see, 3 is clearly a smaller number than a million.
So, power lines kill more birds each year than all of the birds killed to make the Migratory Bird Treaty Act happen in the first place.
God, I love America.
On a similar note, communication towers kill 50 million birds per year. Oil waste pits drown 1 million birds per year. Wind farms kill 500,000 birds per year. And natural gas, they don't have hard numbers just yet because it's still kind of a new beast. But they do note that one gas flare incident in Canada roasted 7,500 birds in 2013. One gas flare incident roasted over 7,000 birds.
Please forgive me for what I'm about to say.
Uh-huh.
But it smelled delicious.
I know, right? But it was, like, not great for the birds. Also, pretty sure all that meat went to waste.
Yeah.
In light of all of this, in February of 2017, the Department of the Interior decided it will no longer levy the MBTA against corporations for, quote, accidental bird deaths.
I swear to God.
individual citizens are still subject to prosecution for collecting stray cardinal feathers.
You heard that right, folks. I'm a felon for picking up a feather in the woods.
175 million birds dead, that's fine.
It's fine.
It's fine.
It was an accident.
It's fine.
The jury
they didn't mean
was
it.
Sympathetic.
They didn't know the birds were there. Wink, 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 wink. D is making a perfect angry emoji face and I'm loving it. So once again, corporations have greater rights and fewer responsibilities than any actual citizen.
And that's great because we all know that, unlike the rest of us, they don't have any money or power or influence. So we should be protecting them.
Yeah. Remember earlier that Virginia Woolf pin about how capitalism always blames mass destruction on the individual rather than the industry?
Mm-hmm.
If every single United States citizen today went out and killed a bird, fewer birds would be dead than by power lines.
That's a hell of a math fact to drop on us. Might I call it a depressing math fact?
So this is unacceptable on a lot of levels.
Like, just every level, like, yeah.
Even if you hate birds and wish they were all dead, the disparity in rights between a corporation and a citizen should piss you off.
Because again, you could be for real arrested or fined for picking up a feather in the woods.
And not like a cute, like, $150 speeding ticket fine, but like a $5,000 fine and possible jail time.
When Fish and Game came through the antique store, it was a real terror. Because you could have a whole business shut down on this.
This episode was legit inspired by D hanging out with me every day and telling me horror stories about Fish and Game came to the shop today, they yelled at me about ducks for 4 hours.
Like, which was fine because I love animals and, like, taxidermy and dead stuff, but I had to learn on my feet real quick that I had to be able to back up everything I said.
Also, the Migratory Birds Treaty Act has since expanded to cover over 2,000 species. So, you had to learn a lot about birds.
I had to learn a lot about birds, and it, like I mentioned before, it gets frustrating because there aren't many birds that don't migrate. So you have to become familiar with where these birds are, at what point in the year, and what license you would need to have.
Supporters of this change to the law say the MBTA was unfairly used to prosecute fossil fuels while ignoring wind farms.
It's just such a shame that these corporations, they don't have any rights, they don't have any money. What are they supposed to do about it, Ken?
This is bullshit on two levels.
I'm just so sympathetic to them.
Level one, wind farms have been fined millions of dollars through the MBTA. And this is despite fact number two, which, if you remember the statistics I just cited, wind farms kill less than a tenth of a percent of the birds killed by power lines.
Math!
Math is fun sometimes.
Guys, kids, if you learn math...
If you learn math, you can learn just how badly the government is screwing you over as a single citizen.
You can get really mad.
You can get so angry with math.
Like, a single corporation has more rights than I ever will.
Yeah. No, actually, it's bullshit. Mm. The Audubon Society also thinks this is bullshit.
At least someone's on my side.
They filed a federal lawsuit. Audubon versus the Department of the Interior.
Nice.
And the state of California also thinks this is bullshit. And they are amending the state law to prosecute corporations for, quote, accidental birth deaths under the MBTA as before.
Now, California, ain't that the liberal hellhole that tells me as an American I can't eat cadmium red?
Goddamn California.
California!
Robbing me of my right to give myself cancer.
You were in art school with me. We've unironically heard that argument.
So, one, go Audubon Society, go California, and two, other states are also taking similar measures as California.
That's great.
So, yeah, things are on the up, but if this makes you angry, check out the Audubon Society.
I was literally just thinking I was going to go join.
They are actively fighting this bullshit, stripping you of your rights while letting corporations run free wild over the plains.
And as a fringe benefit for doing the right thing, most Audubon societies also feature really cool events for members.
Also that. Birds are cool, turns out.
Yeah, well, and they don't, like, Audubon Society is way past just birds. They do, like, a lot of conservation work and nature in general. I think the local one had, like, a salamander walk. Where they talk about salamanders in the local wetlands.
Oh, man. Vernal pools.
You'd be supporting something that is very important, and also you could be having some fun in nature.
So, to recap, power lines can kill 175 million birds per year, and that's fine. We can't sell one dead bird a hat from 100 years ago.
And I'm not saying that I disagree with the Migratory Bird Act or the Lacey Laws.
But the disparity?
Yeah, it's. I want everyone to have to know what I know. Everyone should be able to back up their bullshit as good as your standard antiques dealer in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. So that's my light, fun, short, and sweet dead bird hats episode.
So basically eat the rich.
I mean, I feel like we end every episode with that.
I think this should be a revolution. I think cassowaries are going to be the instrument that I use.
Cassowaries, for those of you who don't know, are a bird native to Australia that features one very long talon that is used exclusively to gut things, very often people.
Very often.
Very often, because people think, oh, it a burb. It can't hurt. And then their intestines are on the ground and the burb is standing victorious over their corpse.
In Florida, they are listed as a class 2 animal, which you might notice is one below class 1, which includes lions.
A cassowary is slightly less dangerous than a lion.
Only slightly, because they've got fewer legs and they're not as big. But that's not by, like, class 2 includes crocodiles and honey badgers.
I think they might actually have bigger claws.
They do have bigger claws. And their claws are out all the time, and they have a stronger defense instinct. Like, a lion will leave you alone because it knows it's more powerful. A cassowary doesn't care.
Cassowary ain't give a fuck. Sources for this episode include...
Cassowaries.
Cassowaries. Consider, won't you? Thank you.
John James Audubon's Angry Ghost. Before we get the sources, do you think that, like, while this is all happening, his ghost was floating around, like, wringing its hands, like, oh, fuck, man, I was really incorrect. Shit, I hacked up.
Real talk, I do want to break out our actual vintage Ouija board and let him know what the fuck is up.
Like, just, like, buddy, do you know how bad you ruined everything?
Do you know how wrong you were about birds?
God, it would have taken one sentence in your book to be like, birds are great and you shouldn't kill them. And everybody would have just taken that at your word, but you didn't.
But you didn't.
But you didn't.
Sources include the Victoria and Albert Museum website's article, Investigation of a Victorian Ornithological Adornment.
That's a great title.
There are a lot of great titles in these sources, so just gonna quick preview. NCWildlife.org's article, Unlikely Head Fellows, Reflecting on Millenary History and Migratory Bird Conservation. SmithsonianMagazine.com was the fucking MVP of this episode with How Two Women Ended the Deadly Feather Trade, and Five Things to Know About the Recently Changed Migratory Bird Act, and Keeping Feathers Off Hats and on Birds.
That was great.
HistoryNewsNetwork.org had the article, When We Murdered Birds to Make Hats. The SocietyPages.org had the article, How the Bird Hat Craze Almost Killed the Dinosaurs. NPR.org had the article, Hats Off to Women Who Saved the Birds, which included what I'm hoping is the first use of the phrase, bird thirsty.
We can only pray.
OrnamentMagazine.org had the article, Foul Intentions, Fashion Activism Conservation.
Why does this hit everyone's pun button?
The entire Fashioning Feathers blog at fashioningfeathers.info was a huge help. RacingNellieBly.com had early female conservationists promoted bird-friendly fashions. Victoriana.com had wings, breasts, birds.
And you know what?
It'sNewsToYou.me had women rise up for cruelty-free hats. PopSci.com had the women who removed birds from people's hats.
All right, well, PopSci, you had a lot to live up to, and you really just didn't stick the landing.
Also got a lot of help from, as always, Wikipedia. And this episode in particular, the Audubon Society was an invaluable source.
Yeah, please consider donating.
Please consider the Audubon Society. If you would like to yell about dead birds on hats...
real talk, I kind of hate milliners now.
I mean, you know. You can contact us directly at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit up our Facebook page at facebook.com/antiquesfreaks, or join our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends, where we will be posting a lot of photos of some absolutely bonkers hats.
A lot of them just have a whole dead bird on them.
And a lot of links to the Audubon Society.
If you're a milliner or bird poacher and you're very mad about the contents of this episode, consider eating rocks. Wait, I'm sorry. You know, if you're a milliner...
You are the least concerned right now.
You're fine. I'm sorry I came at you so hard.
Yeah, milliners and hunters least concerned right now. Actual concern, fossil fuels. So if you are fossil fuels, fuck off.
I'm still gonna give the poacher... Hunters fine, poachers... Meh.
Still not as big a problem.
No, that's true.
If you would like to give us money in addition to the Audubon Society, you can check out our shop at etsy.com/shop/antiquestreaks, where we have a lot of dead animals, because dead animals are fun, damn it, but inequality between corporations and citizens is not fun.
We have zero dead birds, in case the fishing game is listening.
No dead birds. Several vintage goods, and also stickers and t-shirts.
And posters soon.
Posters. Posters from Attack Bear Press. If you would like posters earlier than they will go up on our shop, check out Attack Bear Press directly.
Posters soon and books as soon as I get myself together.
Oh, somebody went to an estate sale and somebody went ham on books.
Somebody went to 3 estate sales.
And went ham on books at all of them.
So I'm going to be unloading my personal collection. I hope you all enjoy. Please enjoy.
Enjoy books. You can also check out our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks.
You got it.
I got it. And you can there listen to deleted scenes and also join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month. Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees, keeping the podcast lights on, and getting us ever closer to a second microphone, and ever closer to our other goal, which is producing bonus episodes for Patreon subscribers.
And just closer to loving life and loving you.
Making life worth living. Thank you very much.
Even if we're not a corporation.
Yet.
Yet.
Someday we will kill 175 million birds per year.
We will incorporate, we will find a way to become hazardous to the environment.
And thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.